What is meant by non-stealing? It means that we must give up the egotistic delusion that we can possess things, that anything can belong exclusively to us as individuals. We may think, but we are good people. We do not steal anything. Whatever we have worked for and earned, it belongs to us by right. But the truth is that nothing at all belongs to us. Everything belongs to God. When we regard anything in this universe as ours, we are appropriating God's possession. What then is meekness? It is to live in self-surrender to God, free from the sense of me and mine. This does not mean that we should get rid of wealth, family, and friends, but we should get rid of the idea that they belong to us. They belong to God. We should think of ourselves as God's servants, to whose care He has entrusted His creatures and possessions. As soon as we understand this truth and give up our deluded individual claims, we find that in the truest sense, everything belongs to us after all. Conquerors who try to become masters of the world by force of arms never inherit anything except worry, trouble, and headaches. Misers who accumulate huge wealth are only chained to their gold. They never really possess it. But the man who has given up his sense of attachment experiences the advantages which possessions afford without the misery which possessiveness brings. Many people dislike this saying of Christ because they think that the meek can never achieve anything. They think that no happiness is to be had in life unless one is aggressive. When they are told to give up the ego, to be meek, they are afraid that they will lose everything. But they are wrong. In the words of Swami Brahmamananda, people who live in the senses think that they are enjoying life. What do they know about enjoyment? Only those who are filled with divine bliss really enjoy life. But arguments will not prove this truth. You have to experience it. Then only will you be convinced. If a spiritual aspirant sincerely follows Christ's teaching of meekness, he will find it very practical. He will find that anger and resentment can be conquered by gentleness and love. The Chinese mystic Lao Tzu expressed this truth by saying, "Of the soft and weak things in the world, none is weaker than water. But in overcoming that which is firm and strong, nothing can equal it. That which is soft conquers the hard. Rigidity and hardness are companions of death. Softness and tenderness are companions of life." By sincerely giving up the ego to God, by being meek, we will gain everything. We will inherit the earth. Blessed are they which do hunger and thirst after righteousness, for they shall be filled. What is the righteousness for which Christ wants us to hunger and thirst? It is the righteousness which, in a number of passages in the Old Testament, is practically synonymous with salvation. In other words, with deliverance from evil and union with God. This righteousness, therefore, is not what we ordinarily think of as moral virtues or good qualities, not relative good as opposed to evil or relative virtue as opposed to vice, but absolute righteousness, absolute goodness. The hunger and thirst after the righteousness of which Christ speaks is a hunger and thirst after God Himself. It has already been pointed out that most of us do not really want God. If we analyze ourselves, we shall find that our interest in God is not nearly as strong as our interest in all kinds of worldly objects. But even a slight desire to know the divine reality is a beginning that can lead us higher. We must start with self-effort. We must struggle to develop love for the Lord by practicing recollectedness of Him, by prayer, worship, and meditation. As we practice these spiritual disciplines, our slight desire to realize Him will become intensified until it is a raging hunger and a burning thirst. To those who asked Him how to realize God, Sri Ramakrishna would say, "Cry to Him with a yearning heart, and then you will see Him. After the rosy light of dawn, out comes the sun." Likewise, longing is followed by the vision of God. He will reveal Himself to you if you love Him with the combined force of these three attachments: the attachment of a miser to his wealth, that of a mother to her newborn child, and that of a chaste wife to her husband. Intense longing is the surest way to God vision. We must learn to direct all our thoughts and all our energy consciously towards God. One gigantic thought wave must be raised in the mind, engulfing all the cravings and passions which distract us from the spiritual goal. When the mind thus becomes one-pointed and concentrated upon God, we shall be filled with righteousness. There is a story of a disciple who asked his teacher, "Sir, how can I realize God?" "Come along," said the teacher, "I will show you." He took the disciple to a lake, and both plunged in. Suddenly the teacher reached over and pressed the disciple's head under water. A few moments later he released him and asked, "Well, how did you feel?" "Oh, I was dying for a breath of air," gasped the disciple. Then the teacher said, "When you feel that intensely for God, you won't have to wait long for His vision." Blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy. One of the yoga aphorisms of Patanjali, the father of Hindu psychology, corresponds to this beatitude: "Undisturbed calmness of the mind is attained by cultivating friendliness towards the happy, mercy and compassion for the unhappy, delight in the virtuous, and indifference towards the wicked." To be merciful is one of the conditions necessary before we can receive the truth of God. Envy, jealousy, hatred, these are some of the universal weaknesses inborn in man. They are linked with our ego sense, which stems from ignorance. How are we to overcome them? By raising an opposite wave of thought. When somebody is happy, we should not be jealous of him. We should try to realize our friendship and unity and be happy with him. When somebody is unhappy, we should not be glad. We should feel sympathy and be merciful. When a man is good, do not be envious. When he is bad, do not hate him. Be indifferent to the wicked. Any thought of hate, even so-called righteous hatred of evil, will raise a wave of hatred and evil in our own minds, increasing our ignorance and restlessness. We cannot think of the Lord or love Him until this thought wave has subsided. If we want to find God, we have to become God-like in mercy. My master used to say, "What is the difference between man and God? Man, if you hurt him but once, will forget all your previous kindnesses to him and remember the one time you failed. But if you forget God and sin against him hundreds of times, still, he will forgive all your faults and remember the few times that you sincerely prayed to him." Sin exists only in man's eyes. God does not look to man's sins. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. In every religion, we find two basic principles: the ideal to be realized and the method of realization. Every scripture of the world has proclaimed the truth that God exists and that the purpose of man's life is to know Him. Every great spiritual teacher has taught that man must realize God and be reborn in spirit. In the Sermon on the Mount, the attainment of this ideal is expressed as perfection in God. Be ye therefore perfect, even as your Father which is in heaven is perfect. And the method of realization which Christ teaches is the purification of the heart, which leads to that perfection. What is this purity which we must have before God reveals Himself to us? We all know of people whom we would describe as pure in an ethical sense, but they have not seen God. What is the reason? Ethical life, the steady practice of moral virtues, is needed as a preparation for spiritual life, and therefore is a fundamental teaching in every religion. But it does not enable us to see God. It is like the foundation of a house. It is not the superstructure. What is the test of purity? Try to think of God now, this very moment. What do you find? The thought of His presence passes through your mind, perhaps like a flash. Then many distractions begin. You are thinking of everything else in the universe but God. These distractions show that the mind is still impure, and therefore not ready to receive the vision of God. The impurities consist of various impressions which the mind has gathered from birth to birth. The impressions have been created and stored in the subconscious part of the mind as the result of an individual's thoughts and actions, and in their totality they represent his character. These impressions must be dissolved completely before the mind can be considered pure. St. Paul referred to this overhauling of the mind in his epistle to the Romans when he said, "Be ye transformed by the renewing of your mind." According to yoga psychology, there are five root causes of impressions in the mind. First is ignorance, in a universal sense, of our divine nature. God dwells in and around us, but we are not conscious of this truth. Instead of seeing God, we see this universe of many names and forms which we believe to be real, just as a man who sees a rope lying on the ground in the dusk may believe it in the twilight of his ignorance to be a snake. Secondly, there is the sense of ego projected by this ignorance, which makes us think of ourselves as separate from